Today is Mother's Day, but I want to talk about my father. Before his retirement a few years ago, my father was a high school coach. He was the head boys basketball coach for most of the time I was living at home, but he also coached football and baseball and track, you name it. And his final job before his retirement was as the athletic director at the high school in Johnson City, Texas, where he was second in power only to the mayor, right? That sort of thing. And he and I talk a lot about how being a coach and being a pastor are at times similar kinds of work. They're both pretty visible jobs. The community gathers at least once a week to watch you work. Your kids grow up sitting with other people on game day each week and seeing you up front. And now this is not this congregation, but other congregations. But pastors and coaches sometimes get criticism because anyone who's ever played high school ball or even watched a game thinks they're an expert. And the similarities don't stop there. I often think that there are many similarities between the way that we experience organized sports throughout our lives and the way we experience organized religion. Right? We play when we're young. It's a big part of the first way we experience community. And then when we get into high school, sometimes our sport becomes almost our whole life. I ran cross country when I was in high school, and that was the first time I took a trip with people who weren't part of my family, you know, an overnight trip. Those are the people who you spend all of your time with. Those becomes a big part of your identity, much like with youth group trips. You know, it becomes a big part of who you are. But then we go to college, right? And many of us stop playing sports for a while, or maybe even stop working out at all. And we might play a pickup game here or there, but we don't really need the exercise. You know, we're in college, our bodies are fine. We don't really need the community. You're often already living with a whole group of your peers. And we realize maybe we weren't really that good at it, you know, in the first place. You know, we're not going to build our careers on it. We're maybe better at other things. Right? We'll still spectate. We'll still watch a game. We might even analyze or debate the finer points of sports. And that can be really exciting, too. But we don't actually need to get out there and participate. But then, when you have children, then you think, oh, well, I really want them to experience the organized sport that I experienced as a young person. You want them to have the same upbringing that you did. You remember how exciting it was and how fun. So you sign your kids up. And then even the more committed of you, even participate along with them, coach their little league teams. You might even play at home as a family from time to time in the backyard, right? And I've been weighing these similarities. I've been thinking about it a lot, actually. So now that I'm on a softball team for the first time since I was in fourth grade, yeah, go Dirt Angels. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I've been thinking a lot about why it's been so long since I actually played sports. And I've been trying to figure out here if there is any difference at all in the way that we experience sports throughout our lives and the way that we experience religion. Or if there even should be a difference. I mean, on the one hand, okay, sports are great. They teach us really great lessons. They're a big part of our lives. We learn things from them. And the idea that our children bring us back to important truths, that's fantastic. And are any of us any worse off for that hiatus we took from sports when we were in college? But I feel like you can feel it too. I've been trying to put my finger on what feels so troubling about those similarities. Why that feels like a problem. It's not immediately apparent. Why is that such a convicting metaphor? So I read today's text, a funny little story, right? Really teachable for Sunday school. Megan is probably not struggling right now to teach the young kids this story in Bridges to Worship. Paul and Barnabas, they're in Lystra. We're in the book of Acts of the Apostles, a little over a decade after the resurrection. And Paul sees a man who can't walk. And he looks him in the face. And he sees faith. And so he says, "Stand on your feet." And so the man just pops right up, like almost like a cartoon. And the people of Lystra, they cheer. And they say, "The gods have come down in human form." They think Barnabas is Zeus and Paul is Hermes because he talks a lot. And the priest of Zeus starts a parade. And they bring oxen and garlands. And they want to bring sacrifices to these gods who have come to visit them. And Barnabas and Paul have to be all like, "Oh, no, we're not gods. Don't worship us." Another similarity between coaches and pastors. That happens a lot. And actually, they give this really beautiful speech where they say, "We are just mortals, but there is a living God, a creator who made heaven and earth and the seas and everything in them, who gives rain in fruitful season, who fills our bellies and fills our hearts with joy. A God who is more effective than these ineffective statues you've been worshiping. A God who is more than us. We're just creation, but there is a creator." And these people love them all the more for it and want to give them things. And that's where our reading, our lectionary reading for the day ends. And it would be nice to just stop there and then go out and enjoy the day, have some brunch. That's where our reading stops. But the story goes on. In the very next verse, we hear that in the midst of this celebration and this beautiful speech, Barnabas and Paul's opponents show up. They've followed them all the way from Antioch and Iconium, and these opponents win over the crowd, and they pull Paul out and stone him nearly to death and throw him out of the city. And yet, he gets back up, and he goes back into Lystra, and he goes to Antioch, and he goes back to these places where people have been against him. He's not even deterred by the risking of his life. It's not the first time this has happened to him, and it will not be the last. And in fact, right after our lesson last week, remember that heartwarming story about Peter and Cornelius? Right after that, Peter is imprisoned. Some of the disciples are killed. And I realized why that comparison between sports and religion feels so uncomfortable. Because it reduces church to an activity. And for the early church, it was not an activity. It was not a game or an exercise in team building. It was a way of life. It was dangerous and it was life-consuming. And not just for the church professionals like Paul and Barnabas and Peter, but for all the disciples that they made and left behind to establish those churches. The early church was not a club. It was a small group of rebels, awake to and engaged in the struggle against a global military superpower. And we are not. I mean, we couldn't even be if we wanted to. We are not the small band of rebels in our time. There are 1.9 million Christians just in Chicago. There are 80 just Presbyterian churches in Chicago. There's more than one PCUSA church within walking distance of us right now. We are not the minority here. And like we talked about last week, we are not the sole bearers of the gospel in our time. If Peter wasn't back then, we are certainly not now. Author and theologian Rob Bell puts it this way, talking about the early church and really the whole Bible. He says, "The Bible was written by and for a small number of people fighting for their survival when empires are marching around and exterminating people." So if you happen to be part of a global military superpower, you might miss some of the themes. Because a major theme is that God is on the side of the marginalized and the downtrodden. We are the empire in this story. Okay, so unpopular opinion. There's no longer a need to tell everyone about Jesus. If you're living in this time, in this place, you've heard about Jesus. And so if we're still just worrying about whether or not people have heard about the resurrection, no wonder church just feels like an activity to occupy our time. Because that work is done. I mean, you can buy Easter baskets at Target. They've heard the story. But that doesn't mean that following Jesus or actually being the church is easy. Because, right, it's not like we're living in an idyllic time that doesn't have any struggles or sacrifices to make. It's not like we're not living in dangerous times where power, money, control, and empire still rule. We're just living in a time when being a Christian doesn't mean you must confront any of that. All that is different in our time from the time of Paul and Barnabas is flush toilets, and Christianity is now the stated religion of the majority. And Christianity can safely be extracurricular. The issues haven't changed, and the call of the Spirit to peace and justice has not changed, but we've just gained the privilege of not really having to do anything about it. We've been able to make it a part of our lives without making it our whole lives. And Paul and Barnabas just didn't have that option. They go telling people about a living God, and they're life-risking heroes. And we just don't have to be heroes. We don't have to risk our lives. But just in the past 2 weeks, we've had students in this country losing their lives. We've had at least two heroes who should never have had to be heroes. Kendrick Castillo and Riley Howell, who died to save others from violence while they were just going about their daily lives. They risked their lives and gave their lives because we as a culture, as an empire, don't want to risk our money or our power or our comfort. So maybe there are still some battles worth fighting. Maybe there are still some risks to take. Paul and Barnabas gave everything to spread hope and healing and real change as far as they could possibly go. And the churches they planted were centers of the rebellion for affecting change. And so, in conclusion, I am nothing like my dad. No, I'm just kidding. They're still very similar, but the church can be called into a deeper calling than our extracurricular activities. A calling that is still out there. I said earlier that we don't need to tell people about Jesus because they know. But they don't. I mean, do we really know? Do we know about the justice and the peace of the Spirit of God? There is still work to do. And I'll end with this call. Julia Ward Howe, better known for the Battle Hymn of the Republic, expressed this very hope, this calling specifically to women, to pacifism and political resistance, in a poem she wrote way back in 1870 entitled A Mother's Day Proclamation. Arise then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts, whether your baptism be of water or of tears. Say firmly, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe our dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left at home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead, and then solemnly take counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, each bearing after her own time the sacred empress, not of Caesar, but of God. And may it be so, even in our time. In the name of God, the Creator, Christ, and Holy Spirit. Amen.